was Flo's Reel that you've been listening to, composed and performed by Yul Belis on the dobro. It's a lovely piece from one of our favorite pathology informaticians and accomplished musicians to signal not only that it's time for our very first association of the Pathology Informatics podcast, but also that it's the Pathology Summit's birthday. I can tell you the background of this song. It was composed as a birthday present. So, happy birthday, PI Summit, 40 years old. I am Mary Edgerton. Many of you may know me as the president of API, who sadly had to take the lead in the cancellation of the Pathology Informatics Summit in 2020 because of the pandemic. Thus, I was never able to open a PI Summit. Instead, though, I now have the honor of hosting our inaugural podcast about the history of the PI Summit. I have a great set of guests with me to tell you the story of how this came about and the whole history and everything. It's going to be fun. But first, I want to invite Nova Smith and Grace Che on the show to tell us how this podcast came to be. So stay tuned, because there is a lot more to come. Nova and Grace, welcome to our first API PI broadcast. Most of our listeners will know who you are, but let's have some introductions for our first timers. Nova Smith is the executive director of the Association of Pathology Informatics, AKA she wields the lightsaber that is the life force behind APR and makes the Pathology Informatics Summit a reality. Nova, welcome to the show. How long have you been our executive director? And I should also ask, how long have you been involved with the PI? Because I think that's been even longer.
Hi, Mary. Thank you so much for having me. I have been API's executive director since 2014 after my mentor, Chuck Desard, retired and stepped back as in that position. And I've been involved with API itself since 2010.
That's a good long time. Grace, you're the executive assistant to Nova for the API. When did you get involved?
Well, I had to actually look through my emails because I keep telling people it's only been a year. And it actually started back in April of 2021. And I had reached out to Nova. So my husband, Dave McClintock, is also a path informaticist. And he was a former president. He said, you know, this great organization has so much to do, but not a lot of hands on deck. So, you know, maybe Nova might appreciate an outreach, kind of say hello and see if she needed help. So I went ahead and emailed her and introduced myself. And I had come from handling lots of different little projects just as primarily a stay-at-home mom at that point. But I was doing a lot of outside HOA, PTO, community theater organizations. So anyway, so I said, I have some skills. If you need some help, I can help out. And so that's how it all started. And it's been exciting. And that's probably why it feels like 1 year, because there's so much that goes on with API. So time moves very quickly, which is kind of neat. That's when it started.
It's been really great having Grace as part of my team. When I started working at Pitt DBMI in Mike Bisich's department, I was hired to work as an admin on the staff, and that was after my business in Pittsburgh closed. So as time went on, I started to miss that busyness of having my own business and having a lot of ownership of things. So I went to Chuck Desard and I said, you know, do you have anything that I can take on some more responsibility within the department? And with that, Linda McNaughton, Mike Bisich's admin, was very happy to turn over management of API's membership to me. And little did I know at that time that this was going to lead to me wearing many different hats within the organization and finding something that has become not only my career, but really a labor of love. I've managed API pretty much single-handedly after Chuck retired from 2013 until Grace joined me in 2021. Beth Gibson did join in helping me co-manage the meeting and doing the conference management of PI Summit when we took over management in 2014. But it's really been, I've been a Jill of all trades for a number of years, and working with the incredible people who are involved, all of the pathologists, it's become like a family to me. And working for API has just been something that has brought a lot of joy to my life and a lot of professional satisfaction to my career.
That's wonderful, and I am sure that Michael Besich has told you, but he says to me every time I talk to him outside of your presence, you know, she was the best admin that I had, and they took her. But I think very proud of you and excited that you took this over. And I do remember, even though we had the pandemic in 2020, there was still a lot of busy work because we did have to arrange, we had to pivot. We were planning for an in-person meeting, and we had to pivot and cancel that. You did a lot of work in terms of getting refunds for us, which was great. But then we also had to have something online, which posed a new challenge to registration and how people felt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Pivot and Zoom, I think, became buzzwords starting with the
Yes.
pandemic. Absolutely. Pivot and and Zoom for sure.
Yes. Gosh, I remember my first Zoom cocktail parties. Oh, what a time. What a time. Well, thanks, you know, and thanks again for inviting me to be a part of this. But let's stop a minute just before we start the show. And I know everybody's waiting on the edge of their chairs. And tell us about how you guys came up with the idea for this.
Thanks, Mary. So it was kind of a joint brainstorm after we got an email from Bruce Friedman letting us know that the meeting this year would, in fact, be the 40th iteration of the meeting since it began back before it was merged from Bruce's meeting lab, Infotech, and Mike Besich's meeting, APIII. And our wheels started turning. And I started to think about, unfortunately, we've lost some of the leaders in the field of path informatics. And with them, we lost their history and getting their firsthand recollection or accounts of their involvement in, the birth of what is pathology informatics and API, and therefore, the Pathology Informatics Summit. So I really felt strongly that we should start to get those histories both in writing and orally, which led to Grace suggesting and reminding me that you, Mary, have your own podcast and how wonderful it would be to get you involved. And I'll let Grace speak now to her additional part in this
Oh,
wonderful creation.
yeah, thanks, Nova. We're still in the early stages, so it's really exciting. There's a lot of brainstorming going on. But yeah, when Bruce emailed us, that definitely was the catalyst to start thinking about different ways to capture this history. And Nova and I sit in on a lot of planning committee meetings, and it's amazing when there's downtime and they start sharing stories about, how it used to be or people that they used to work with and how all the challenges that they faced, and some of the problems are new and some of the problems are not new. And they have such a great history and rapport that it would, once we came up with this idea of an oral history and capturing it with Mary, I was like, oh, this is gold. It's going to be beautiful because, I mean, they're just got great personalities, great stories, and we're going to try to feature some of those at the PI Summit, and we're going to continue featuring them throughout the year. But yeah, no, I was telling Bruce that I have the historical background, so for me, collecting this is just sort of natural instinct, and collecting it in different ways. Nova was saying, would it be great to hear the voices telling this firsthand, not just the writing. They do tons of academic writing, but wouldn't it be great to capture these great little quips that they have in little stories? So I think this is gold.
That is so true. I just love the oral tradition of passing on histories. And so great idea, y'all. Great idea. And I'm looking forward to many more being a part of this.
I just want to say we also know we're in wonderful hands. So we're really
Absolutely.
excited that you're helping us with this. So I'm just super excited. Thanks.
Okay, and now for the guest that everybody's been waiting for. I have here with me Dr. and Professor Emeritus Bruce Friedman from the University of Michigan and Dr. Professor Chair and Vice Chancellor Michael Besich from the University of Pittsburgh. These are the two pathology informaticians who first realized the need for a pathology informatics forum and set the wheels in motion. They were also the founding presidents of the Association of Pathology Informatics. I will not say any more because I have them both here to tell you the history of the Pathology Informatics Summit in their own words. Let's start with you, Bruce. Many of you know Bruce Friedman personally through the Association of Pathology Informatics and what we like to affectionately call the PI Summit. He attended the University of Michigan Medical School and graduated in 1966. Bruce went to Yale for a pathology internship, then moved back to Michigan for his anatomic and clinical pathology re residency. Following his training came 2 years in the Army in South Korea and Texas. Great stories there for Dr. Friedman returned to the University of Michigan in 1973 and has been there since. Professor Friedman, please take us down memory lane and tell us the stories of how you began working in pathology informatics before it was known as pathology informatics and laid the groundwork for our PI summit that we attend today.
First up, Mary, I want to start off. You need to talk quickly because I'm 82 and it's very important to record all these details. I was a blood banker when I started with Hal Obermann from 1973 to 1982. And the origin story was Dr. Peter Ward, my chairman, called me into his office in 1982 in February. And we had an LIS at that time, an early version of an LIS. And essentially, there was a pathology faculty member who was leaving, and he asked me if I could run the LIS. So this was in 1982. I had no background at all, and he understood in technology, I'll say, and he understood that. So he said, "You take the job on an interim basis, and we'll look for someone who can do the job better." And he never found, and all the decades later, never found anyone who could do it better. I don't know what that says about me or about the field, but one of the things I like to say is, in 1982, there were only two other pathologists who were seriously doing what came to be known as informatics, Ray Aller and Don Connolly at Minnesota, both superb people and were fabulous in helping me get oriented. Then the story of the conference is I'd been running a blood bank conference, so I felt very comfortable doing CME activities. So the next year in 83, I launched what was called AIMCL. There's going to be a lot of acronyms. Automated Information Management in the Clinical Labs. The conference was called AIMCL. Started in 83, and hence this is our 40th anniversary. We'll talk through the journey how AIMCL morphed into PI Summit, but it started as AIMCL, and I ran it for 21 years at the University of Michigan. So, do you have any, what kind of questions would you like to ask me following that intro?
Well, what was the attendance like in the first year?
It was fantastic. There was early days, but essentially we had a separate building to do the CME conferences. And I would say that our audiences in those early, even in the early days, were 200 to 250 people and 20 or 25 plus vendors. So there was an auditorium and a large lobby where we put the vendors. So I think I hit the sweet spot there in terms of that early conference, high energy. And the vendors were, of course, were delighted to be there and show their wares, even in those early days.
That was fantastic. Now, I also need to have to ask you, how did you come up with the term informatics? And I first need to tell you that when I first heard that term, I was affected by my bias towards Americanized words since I had studied for my PhD in England. And people would pass by and see things like, oh, Washeteria, what a terrible made-up word. And I thought, oh, informatics, is that a made-up word? How did
Well,
that come about?
there was a French word, and this was in common parlance in the world of computer science. The French word informatique, excuse my accent, referred to computer management and computer manipulation. So that was anglicized to informatics. And you might think that I pondered this for a long time, but I don't even remember sweating that. It just seemed to me that pathology informatics just flowed naturally. And there was, of course, activity in general medical informatics, and so this was an offshoot. But I should also say that as I've done this sort of looking back into the past, I was not really totally aware that I was doing anything unusual. I was just doing my job. I knew there weren't many people around, but I never had the notion that this was sort of groundwork for the specialty that I pursued. And then, of course, Mike jumped in and did such wonderful work at Pitt.
And how was it accepted at Michigan? What did people say when you held your first conference?
High degree of enthusiasm. And I would say it ran for 21 years. You might ask, why only 21? And the problem was more of an organizational and political problem. I don't think that after 21 years, I was getting frustrated with the University of Michigan Medical School Administration in terms of their support for the meeting. So at that point, I took it to Las Vegas for 6 years. And that was pretty gutsy on my part because I created a nonprofit organization to manage it for 6 years in Vegas. And then what happened was the risk became too great for my little nonprofit. I was at the Venetian Hotel in Las Vegas, which my registrants loved because many of them could gamble and also do informatics, which itself was sort of a gamble. But I think my final bill from the Venetian in those years was something like $130,000 or $140,000 to mount the meeting, which would be only a fraction of what it would cost today. But my little nonprofit was not that well funded, and I got overwhelmed by the risk that was involved. And then I was going to shut it down. I asked around if anyone else was interested. I got no serious offers. And then Mike and I conferred, and he said, let's blend it with a meeting he had started before, APIII. And that's how Lab Infotech Summit moved from Ann Arbor and Vegas to Pittsburgh under Mike's supervision.
Now, you had a lot of other terms that you mentioned to me or things that people said to you about this type of organization. Can you tell us a few of those stories?
Well, yeah, I know there's a saying, you can't get no respect. And I know it sounds unbelievable in these days of AI, but essentially computers in those early years were really not, they were considered kind of machines and not that interesting, just doing the sort of gut work. And an executive with one of the large pathology organizations said to me one day, he said, you know, computers like a pencil, and we don't have pencil conferences. Why would we have computer conferences? But so there was a lot of skepticism about what I was doing, but it never really deterred me because I knew somehow I had a sense that this was going to be important. I really didn't grasp what we're going through today with AI, and maybe Mike will talk more about that, but the sequelae of AI are just, and of course we've all been a critical part of automation, and laboratory testing is the greatest bargain in healthcare today, accounting for maybe 5% or 6% of the budget of a large health system, but critical for 70 or 80% of diagnoses.
Oh,
and the reason it's such a great bargain is because the labs have been automated all these years. So essentially we introduced automation to healthcare, and we're continuing in that same direction now by integrating AI into our automated systems at the lab level or the overarching level and within pathology.
I just want to go back to that pencil comment, which I think is absolutely rich. And I just want to know, who in the Association of Pathology Informatics wants to be the first to volunteer to tell Judy Faulkner that she's running a pencil business?
It's probably no secret that I've always had a bit of an animus toward Epic. And I think in the early days with Beaker, I think at one point I was in Mike's conference lecturing, and I think at that time, they had about 10 people working on Epic. Those were the early days. So I had a good time sort of mocking Epic. But Epic is now succeeding finally, but I still have some criticisms of having a module within an EHR supporting labs. My basic premise is that databases should be managed by the people who understand the data. So pathologists need to manage the laboratory database.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you about that. I'm just going to tell all our listeners that you need to go by the API booth and pick up your API history pencil in honor of Our Lady Pathology Informatics, or should I say Pencil Improvement Conference.
So now we should probably pick up on the story with Mike's contribution, his memories of calling me and saying, why don't you merge the meetings, and maybe those early days of what we used to be called as API.
So I need to introduce Dr. Michael Besich. I told you a little bit about him. I actually have some extra connections with Mike. It turns out that my daughter was in high school with his great niece, same class, graduated together. We had no idea about this. And I'm at a dinner with other mothers, and they ask me what I do. And I say, I'm a pathologist. And she says, oh, my uncle's a pathologist. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, there's 20,000 pathologists in the United States. How am I going to say no? I'm sorry, I've never heard of him. And she says, his name is Mike Bisich. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Mike Bisich, my mentor, one of my heroes.
Mike once told me that the correct pronunciation is Besich, not Besich.
Oh,
So
excuse
I
me.
don't know if he's, I think he's given in to the pressure of Besich, though.
I think everybody does know you as Mike Bisich. So, Mike, welcome to the show. So glad to have you here. So, can you pick up on that that transition to PI with AP triple I? And you need to tell us what AP triple I was.
Yeah, AP Triple I was the initial name of the conference that was a companion to AIMCL. AP Triple I stood for Advancing Pathology Informatics Imaging in the Internet. So Advancing Pathology Informatics Imaging in the Internet, because that was in the rise before the burst of the internet bubble. And AP Triple I then rotated what the I stood for. But in honor of Bruce, he called it AP Yi. Bruce, you forgot. It was AP Oi 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 because of the fact that I built it off the shoulders of this fine freedman.
And now is probably the time for your story about the bigwigs that wanted to take over your meeting.
Oh, yeah.
So I went and paid homage to Bruce because I'd heard about this cheerleader in Michigan and this meeting for laboratory informatics. And I was at the very early stages of my own career in Pittsburgh. I think this was 1994 when I first visited AIMCL and met Bruce. And I never met such an energetic cheerleader for things that really mattered to the future of pathology than this dude. So our partnership has been glorious, spanning decades now. And, I'm really proud that Bruce got me in all this damn trouble with informatics. I'm a tumor cell biologist by training, my PhD, and I love pathology. My origins in pathology really came from my love of electron microscopy. And I went to AIMCL, and at that meeting, Bruce introduced me to Bob McGonigal. And between Bob McGonigal and a colleague of mine in the APLIS world, Marianne Boswell, at that time at Dynamic Healthcare Technologies, the three of them cornered me and said, "Mike, you got to do a companion meeting to Brucey's. And the two of you can rule the world with pathology informatics." And I go, "I'm not going to build off. This guy's got tremendous. I don't have as much enthusiasm, and I'm a wet bench geek. I'm not, informatics. I could barely spell it." So, talking with Bruce and talking with our first virtual fellow, who is obviously central to the pathology informatics summit, Mark Tuthill. We had a set group of sessions and said, "Okay, if we're going to do a companion meeting, how do we divide and conquer?" And I was in anatomic pathology. Obviously, Brucey's a blood banker. And we thought, you know what? Two meetings, one on the clinical laboratory and one on the anatomic pathology laboratory, would be good bookends. So we put together a proposal. Bruce and Mark and I and a couple of my fellows in informatics at the University of Pittsburgh, and wrote up a beautiful one-page proposal. So I took it to my chair, being the dutiful little assistant professor, George Michaelopoulos, and said, "George, I think this is a really good idea. I'd like to run a meeting. I'd like to model it after this meeting in Michigan. What do you think?" And he said, "Oh, this is a great idea." He said, "But you got to run this up the food chain in pathology." So he took me to the Association of Pathology Chairs group. We met in Juan Rosai's esteemed office in New York. And the group was called Universities Associated for Research and Education in Pathology, URAP. And in the URAP meeting, Juan Rosai, famous anatomic pathologist, chaired the meeting. you know, the Rezai textbook of anatomic pathology, you know, that one, of surgical pathology rather. And since I was born out of the WashU tradition, that's where I trained in anatomic pathology, the great god of Juan Rezai was there. It couldn't have been better for an assistant professor. So I went on for an hour and I presented our plan as part of the APC URAP group. And Leo Furcht was there, my chair, who, you know.
Leo was chair at Minnesota.
Yeah. So Leo Furcht, Bob Trelstad, one of the people early off that I really admired out of New Jersey, and Juan Rezai and George Michaelopoulos were all there. I felt like I'd died and gone to heaven. And they were like, wow, this is great. We really want to, you know, this is phenomenal. So they asked me to leave the room. And so I left the room like a dutiful little assistant professor.
That's the last time anyone's asked you to leave the room.
And then I came back in the room and they said, okay, we'll follow up with you. And I'm like, really? So, because I was looking for them to endorse and perhaps my own chair and URAP APC support this birth of a new meeting. So we had to go to the LaGuardia Airport. We hopped in a taxi cab. My chair was in the front seat. And in the back seat, I was cornered by Leo Furcht, who was the chair of this group at the time, and Juan Rezai. Juan was traveling overseas, and my chair didn't say a damn thing. Juan didn't say a damn thing. And Leo turns to me, says, Mike, he says, we want to let you know that it's a really good idea that you start this pathology informatics meeting, but you can't do this yourself. You're an assistant professor. Nobody will show up. What you really need is somebody, a luminary, to lead it. So we've decided that Juan Rezai will lead the meeting. And that if you're really a good boy, we'll let you be co-director. You do all the work. Juan will bring the people in for you. And I'm like going, really? Well, I guess I got to do this. So in our virtual pathology informatics fellowship for Mark Tuttle, we're sitting on a in a conference call, no Zoom back those days. And my two fellows are in the room, as well as the group of people that were technically supporting our APLIS group. And Brucey was on the phone. And Mark
in Ann Arbor.
And Mark
Mark was on.
Mark was out at Dartmouth.
He was doing his residency in New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire. I thought I was at Dartmouth. Yeah. And Bruce was in Michigan. And I dutifully report to Bruce and Mark, you know what? They loved our proposal, but here's the deal. They want Juan Rezai to lead it. And they want me to be the dutiful little assistant professor soldier to stand it up. And there was this gigantic pregnant pause. And Bruce, just in a way Bruce can only say, he says, fuck them. What do we need them for doing this meeting? As a result, my chair didn't talk to me for nearly 10 years. On the other hand, URAP, and I'm, you know, obviously just joking about this humble beginning for our joint meetings, but URAP came a very strong supporter of API. In 1999, 2000, I dropped in chat a little snippet from the history of URAP. They were very instrumental in helping us launch the Association for Pathology Informatics and endorsing it amongst pathology chairs and groups, and it all turned out well. But I have to tell you, this powerful little partner, Bruce, is really responsible for all the things that have come to me and the blessings of this tremendous community of pathology informatics. Bruce couldn't be a better partner, still is the best partner anyone could ever hope for. And Bruce taught me an important term that I use over and over and over again, almost disarming when you work in the very competitive academic world that I work in. It's called co-opetition. You know, Bruce told me that the best way for us to partner is to leapfrog each other consistently. I'll challenge you here. You challenge me here. Let's share our secrets, our secret sauce, in a way that essentially lets us continue to move the discipline forward. And, you know, if we look back at the history of pathology informatics, I will tell you, co-opetition is the model of what we do. We really share aggressively everything we do, all the artifacts, the learnings, the trainings. the secret sauce of this amazing group of people that has created this community, and I credit it all to Bruce.
You mentioned
I'm Avis. He's Hertz.
You mentioned Bob McGonigal. We need to talk about Bob McGonigal. Mm-hmm. Bob was publisher of Cap Today, and I don't know why, maybe some kind of miswiring in his brain, but he loved informatics and loved us. So he was one of our greatest supporters, and it continues to this day. He attended all our meetings. He was a faculty member, this tall, lanky guy with a bow tie. In those days, he was smoking. So half our discussions were on loading docks at meetings because they wouldn't let him smoke inside. But he's been this avid supporter for us. And in so doing, I think, turned CAP toward a greater interest in informatics. So he was his contributions were massive to the field, and that needs to be recognized.
Yeah, yeah. And the in-kind contributions he and CAP Today and CAP as an organization have done for API, the Pathology Informatics Summit, and AIMCL and APIII before, Bob spotted the trend of how important this would be for the discipline. And if I have to think, the single largest contributor to outbound messaging from our group still is and remains CAP Today and their amazing connectedness to practicing pathologists.
Oh, I love sitting down with Bob McGonigal, and I loved doing it at both of your meetings, which I attended back in the 90s. Now, Bruce, you mentioned that in 2010, you were terminating the Pathology Informatics Summit after those 6 years.
Yeah.
And Mike, you were running APIII. And yeah. So how did this come
Mike
together?
Mike just called me, and I was ready to sunset the Las Vegas meeting, because I mentioned before I was getting frightened by the financial responsibility. And Mike said, just join us. And it was a very smooth transition. And I carried over, worked with Mike's crew. And so that's the continuity with AIMCL to PI Summit in Vegas, and then to Mike's meeting, which he had started previously, and we all were comfortable with each other, and the team just kind of merged. And so that's why we've got the 40th anniversary coming up. And this is a continuity of these various meetings and our friendship.
I have to tell you, it was absolutely, you know, I really do believe I was late to the parade that Bruce was already very capably leading. And we just, you know, this idea that we borrowed, I mean, it was just tremendous synergy between his ideas and my ideas. And I was lucky enough to, at that point in time, have formed an independent financial unit and have actually Nova Smith embedded in it, who's now the executive director of API. She essentially was a lead administrative assistant in my department. And a number of people, if you remember Bruce, Chuck Desard.
Fantastic.
Fantastic department administrator. I told him, I said, listen, we have this department. There's this national meeting, and there's this amazing dude in Michigan that we have to support. And boy, the kismet between Chuck Desard and Bruce Feedman was deep. Put together a not-for-profit, essentially made what was two academic hacks working together, put a corporate 501c3 under it, and the magic happened. You know, we have our own journal now that came from the work of Bruce and Chuck together. You know, Laurent Pentenowitz, who's now going to be chair at Pittsburgh, came out of this community.
Did Mike Feldman, the new chair at Indiana. So we have two chairs with an informatics background. And that's amazing that we're rising to those levels because of the quality of the individuals.
Oh, well, and I'm telling you, the innovation that's going to come out of the pathology informatics community and creating the next generation of leaders is right there at the top. There are a number of pathologists that are in leader. The Joel Saltz, who's chair of biomedical informatics at Stony Brook. There are a number of people. A pathologist was the head of the National Library of Medicine, which is the funding agency. Don Lindbergh, bless his heart, was my inspiration for staying in academic informatics. The training programs now that have been created through the National Library of Medicine with Don's vision. All contributions to what has been a tremendous rise. And the capper really is the American Board of Family Medicine and Board of Pathology co-sponsoring the Clinical Informatics Fellowship as a board specialty. All of that came out of this amazing community of people.
You know, I was just talking the other day, what we now call AI in the old days, or even some to a certain extent today, we called rules. So we had if-then rules working in the laboratory. And there was something called reflex testing. And reflex testing operated on a 24-hour cycle. So a clinician caring for a patient would order 5 or 6 or 7 tests at the time of admission. And then at the so-called reflex testing, on a 24-hour cycle, we'd look at the positives, and then the next 24 hours, we ordered the relevant tests to get a finer view of what's going on diagnostically. I think with AI, and this is going to take some collaboration with the clinicians, and if our labs can operate fast enough, we're going to do 4 or 5 days worth of testing on a reflex basis in 24 hours. So by the end of 24 hours after an admission for diagnostic dilemmas, we're going to have all the correct laboratory tests already performed and available for inspection. And frankly, the clinicians today, not like the docs of yesteryear that were great at bedside diagnosis, I think that's a thing of the past. The first thing the docs do now is order labs and imaging. So essentially, I think that the diagnostic dilemmas under AI are going to disappear. You're going to know exactly pretty much what's going on with imaging and of course, pathology are going to be more tightly integrated. I think 15 years ago, I proposed the idea of the creation of a Department of Diagnostic Medicine, which would be a merger of pathology and radiology. And Michael Feldman loves that idea, and he's pursuing that. But I think that's the direction we need to go. You know, Mike Feldman has pointed out to me for the last 3 years in terms of IT, surgical path, and image analysis has become to the forefront. So our fall meeting at API, we started the workshop, Deep Digital Pathology AI workshop, that's still going in the fall, but that was mainly AP. Now, all the labs like Micro and so forth are now deploying AI and automated processing. So now the movement for digital is going back to the CP side and away to a certain extent from AP.
I think you're absolutely correct. And I know I've actually done some work in trying to improve reflex testing using not just a single score. I specifically worked on HER2-new, but I thought, you know, let's add in the ER and the PR, let's add in the Ki-67, let's see if we can find better rules and reduce our false negatives. And
so what do you guys, so we've talked a lot about the past and that's been fun, but even more fun is the future. So Mary and Mike, what are the clinical labs and surgical path going to look like 2 to 3 years hence? What's going to be the role of the surgical pathologist?
Right. Don't get me started on futuring, because I've done it pretty much all of my career in pathology informatics, and it's the most fun thing to think about. But here's what I see coming. We are now in the era of what is called spatial biology. So the ability to map imaging, genomic, and immunomarkers in multiplexed imaging is the future of our discipline. I didn't want to believe that 10 years ago when I was first told that by one of the people that I was attracted to come join here in Pittsburgh, D. Lansing Taylor, who runs the Drug Discovery Institute here. But Lance said, Mike, he said, what really will take pathology in an evolution and a revolution is multiplexed imaging. And, you know, I'd known about empathy-plexed imaging for a number of years, multiple immunohistochemical markers on a single slide, really fraught with technology, but now it's been reduced to high throughput. And, you know, if you go to AACR, the American Association for Cancer Research, if you go to any cancer-relevant meeting, but most importantly, if you go to USCAP now, the United States and Canadian Academy of Pathology, the entire floor is filled with people selling software to do multiplex imaging and use AI and machine learning to interpret histopathologic images. It's amazing. I went to USCAP in Los Angeles, not this year, year before. And I was astounded. It was like all the same brew of scientific knowledge, input, and commercialization on a floor at USCAP. That's pretty crazy amazing. And where did all this come? Came out of three revolutions: whole slide imaging revolution, multiplex imaging revolution, and now tying it down to single cells in the context of a diagnostic pathologist. So the coalescence of molecular pathology, imaging, and histopathology is the next step forward.
And I want to second that by saying I believe that we may still be processing our tissue into a slide and the slide gets imaged, and overnight a potential differential diagnosis with scoring comes up, orders for whatever the current biomarkers are, but also based on that imaging, orders for what molecular tests should be run that are most likely to be positive.
So where does this place the clinician 3 years hence?
Here's what I say about the clinician is, well, number one, I think we need to change medical education in this country. I think it needs to become more quantitative. When organic chemistry became a part of pre-med education, you were out in the middle of Nowheresville in rural areas without any access to the internet to say, well, what is the most current and best drug? You were using your memory constantly for how to treat things. You don't need that anymore. What you need is access to a good algorithm. I think the doctors of today need to have a much more quantitative undergraduate background. They need to be able to choose the algorithms wisely. They need to be able to understand what the laboratory performance testing is for algorithms. And those will combine, and I say laboratory, I don't mean a pathology laboratory, although I think those algorithms will combine pathology data, anatomic data, and clinical data, and come up with outcomes. So now, instead of going out to choose your analyzer, or you're going out to choose your algorithm, and how are you going to test it and prove that it's still working every year? So I think that's going to be a very important change in medicine. And as that happens, I will still say the clinician may be given a set of 20 markers of the behavior of whatever this disease is that they're trying to treat, and or maybe even more than 20. It said that the human brain can handle 20. So the computer will help to reduce this to 20. The clinician will look at those 20 and match that to what's best for their patient in terms of what their physical status is. Now, that may also be augmented by a routine that takes into account your renal function and your liver functions and your BMI and your percent fat and so on. I do still think that there'll be some heuristics, but the human heuristics have to work with a smaller panel. So
is the clinician going to have some portable console in his hand and talking to the patient and then being the transporter or interpret the knowledge? What's that going to look like in the examining room?
Yeah, just Star Trek, the tricorder.
Nah. Just turn to where radiologists work today. Look at their multi-monitor workstation. You'll have one for molecular. You'll have one for imaging. You'll have one for histopathology. And only the brightest places will merge them all into one screen where you can map on genomic and histopathologic and H&E images and transparently layer it. That's what the new diagnostic.
But the patients, including myself, complaining that the doc's always looking at the screen, he's not looking at them.
Yeah, pathologists will always be buried to patients, but you know what? Our word is word.
What about the clinicians, though? What's it going to feel like in the examining room?
It's they're focused on therapy and interventions to treat. We're focused on diagnostics, and I do believe the vision that Mike Feldman is embodying, where there's a merger between what happens in radiology and pathology. I think radiology is too low resolution. We're going to need to get to the tumor microenvironment in the context of actual cellular biology, cellular pathology. And although we can be liaisons to one another and merge our imaging modalities, I think, you know, read a radiology report. You know, it's a differential diagnosis, many times not definitive. What's in a pathology report? The word. It is this.
That's right.
And that's the difference.
To your point, Bruce, I think that there may be more team medicine. So right now, your patient-facing internist or specialist rounds on patients and visits them. I think it should be a team that includes your pathologist. And your pathologist can have an iPad and say, this is what your tumor looks like, and these are the factors that have made us choose this. And I think that the patient needs to know where this is coming from, and the pathologist needs to be there to say that. The clinician will still have a very personal relationship with the patient that'll affect their compliance. But I think the understanding of the disease coming from the pathologist also impacts compliance. So I see us not moving away from the patient-facing clinician, because we are clinicians, but actually becoming more of the team medicine.
I've written an article, and I don't know where this is going to head, but I think an interesting or even challenging aspect of healthcare is that primary care is being taken over by for-profits. For example, the health insurance company, Walmart, CVS. And the reason that's so interesting is that that's the primary care physicians and clinicians, they're the ones who do the referrals into the hospitals. So I think that primary care is undergoing atrophy at the level of the large health systems and being taken over for profits. So I'm not sure what that's going to look like. And of course, the insurance companies now, the largest employer of physicians in the United States is United Health. And of course, one of their major businesses, of course, is insurance. So with them controlling primary care, what's that going to look like for those encounters, the early part of the encounters in a diagnostic journey for patients?
That's a great question. And I have to say I'm a big supporter of single payer system for a lot of reasons. One is that we spend so much money on coding and recoding and resubmitting claims that is a waste of time and a waste of healthcare dollars. It's a healthcare cost to the institution and drives the price of everything else up. So we need, if it's not a single payer system, at least a better system with standardized coding and standardized messaging in terms of claims.
What's the situation with primary care at Pitt? Do you have any insight into that? And I think this is very relevant because a lot of the lab testing is occurring at that primary care level.
Mm-hmm. That is true. There's a lot of point of care testing going on at the primary care level.
Yeah.
Not all though. I mean, there's still your, you know, you go in for your yearly panel and depending upon your age, it's, you know, your Chem 7, Chem 12, 15, it's your lipids, your vitamin D.
Yeah, no, I can't speak to the clinical pathology world, but I do know the anatomic pathology world is 70% cancer related. And, you know, this obviously diagnostic cockpit of both molecular immunohistochemical multiplex and H&E imaging is an AP specific entity. But, you know, when I think about a lot of the chronic conditions that consume the other 30% of the time in anatomic, like transplant, like, you know, monitoring for dysplasia, like, you know, repeat biopsies for patients that have chronic diseases, like skin conditions. I think this diagnostic cockpit framework, much like the radiologists have, with a knowledge engine behind it and access to lots and lots of data, is really going to drive some enthusiasm back into what is viewed as handicraft in anatomic pathology today. I think that evolution through computational pathology is going to occur. And whether you call it, you know, AI revolution or computational pathology, this coalescence now of algorithms, supercomputing power, and large aggregates of data, it's all coming fast. And you know what? I'm very proud of the data sharing tradition pathologists have always embraced. And, you know, I think this community is ripe for revolution, and no finer place than to go to the, the Krusty Duck USCAP meeting and see AI and multiplexed imaging and genomics as the mainstay of what has been a very staid history focused on analog light images. Now is really coming into the digital age, and right at the center of it is FDA approval of whole slide imaging, which this community, the API community, should take great credit for. We drove that to completion, and the next evolution is coming. Watch what's going to happen with microbiomics.
Oh yeah, that is a fascinating one. I do think that internal medicine, I mean, you use the term atrophied. Internal medicine will have a place as a gateway to a recognition of a morbidity that requires further workup and treatment. And so there will be that panel of diagnostic tests that you get, which is really a key part of your physical every year. You know, yes, there are certain things that are recognized physically. I think OBGYN is you know, one that's very hands-on care oriented, although many of the complexities are actually handled through understanding of lab testing. And
so, Mary, you mentioned need for reform in medical schools and in residency programs. I've been retired 17 years, but I never had any luck in terms of in the distant past, trying to get computer topics into the curriculum, because the committees in the medical schools were senior physicians who didn't really understand what was going on. So how is this reform going to take place in medical school along the lines that Mike has been talking about? How are we going to do a 180 degree turn and train our residents in a different kind of technology and science?
I think we need a new Flexner report. Remember the Flexner report of the
yes.
last year?
Right.
That Flexner report revolutionized medicine in the United States. I think that all of the medical societies need to call for another Flexner report, because they are all facing the advances of algorithms and in their day-to-day work. The College of American Pathologists has actually created a council for informatics and pathology innovation, which is a recognition by a longstanding professional organization that this is needed. I happen to sit on that council, and I keep pushing for the CAP to push forward and call for another Flexner report.
Let me make another prediction, which won't win me any friends. EHRs will be totally obsolete in two or 3 years.
Yes. And you know what?
And the patient portals were potentially an avenue to engage the patients in their own care. And they're so primitive because they're controlled by the EHR vendors. So I don't know what's going to happen to EHRs, but
no,
I think they're obsolete.
I think the architecture, this tab by tab architecture, is one where they've just taken the paper record and putting the tabs in there so that you can get to the different pieces more easily. What I envision coming in the future is a set of forms that healthcare workers are filling out along the way. Your symptoms, your tests, the lab results are coming in. And instead of having to tab through these separately, it'll be a little more like the cockpit that Mike has imagined, where you say, huh, I want to see, I'm looking at the evolution of this patient's tumor. I want to see the images, you know, from over time, and over in between those, I want to see the path reports. I want to see everything as a continuum. I don't want to tab back and forth. These are the items that I want to see in this continuum.
We need a ChatGPT at the front end of the EHR. So the physician's saying, how do I care for this patient today? And what do I need to do? And then the AI will tell him or her. That's what we need.
This is what you need to look at. Right.
Correct.
And I don't want to go see the H&P and then the progress nodes and then this.
Of course not.
I want to be able to have a continuum of the data that's relevant to what I'm doing for the patient right now.
Absolutely.
And the overlays that Mike talks about. I want to see the overlay of the radiology and then the gross imaging, and then the microscopic imaging, and then the molecular profiling.
So the EHR took the highest paid talent in the hospital, the docs and the highly trained nurses, and turned them into clericals, essentially inputting the data.
And tabbing through. And then you have to sit down and write, which you either write what you learned on your last tab, or you look at this some assessment of the patient. And yeah, you're able to pull in all of the, of say the clinical lab data, but now you're going through, scrolling through a page of chemical tests. I want to know which one is abnormal and which abnormality I need to look at. I know at the last cancer center I worked at, I mentioned something about flagging abnormal tests, and they said, all of our patients have abnormal tests. You know, they're undergoing all kinds of therapies, but which is an abnormal test that's different from the rest, which is one that's affecting primary measures of the health of the patient, renal function.
So Mike and Mary, we know we're talking about the AI revolution, and let's get very practical. What vendors are going to bring AI to pathology? Is it going to be the IVD vendors or new vendors? Who's going to carry that load?
Well, I proposed an idea, didn't go through, for a position I was interviewing of setting up a department devoted to algorithm design for medical care that would be a combination of a computer science department and a medical school, and that would generate the algorithms that would be important, and then they could be spun off to different software companies. So I don't know if the traditional vendors that we have today who are embedded in an IVD model, or as our EHRs are embedded in a business model and an architecture of an EHR, I don't know if they'll make that change.
Mike, why don't you jump in here? You've got a lot of commercial background and innovation. Who's going to step forward and do all these things we need and do it quickly?
Mike Feldman and Laurent Pantanowitz is chairs of pathology at Indiana and Pittsburgh. It's going to start in the Midwest and roll over both coasts.
Doing what specifically?
You know, I think that this has to come out of anatomic pathology for this chapter because of the imaging intensity of this. It doesn't mean that we won't affect molecular pathology and the microbiology laboratory eventually, but I do think the cockpit data revolution will be imaging driven. You know, look at what happened to radiology once they went to PACS. The same things now is poised to happen in anatomic pathology. The amount of information density in anatomic pathology images is logarithmically higher than the data that came out of radiology. So, you know, what we lack in pathology is that big tent meeting like radiology has had for years in RSNA, where all the vendors get to show their fancy toys off and spend lots of money to promote the use of technology. You know, I think a significant barrier in pathology is the fragmented nature of anatomic and clinical and blood banking and heme. All of them have their own little small shows. We need that big tent event like RSNA to put all the brightest minds together to common purpose for the discipline. And that's something, you know, only CAP is really positioned to help happen.
But from what you said, you're talking about the complexity of use CAP. Was that going to rise to the occasion and become the big tent meeting?
I'd love to think that that'll happen. I don't think that's use CAP's culture. They're an island unto themselves. I'd love to see them get enlightened. CAP could be the glue to make it happen, but USCAP, CAP, and ASCP, they just don't see eye to eye. Those three organizations have to do it first to then bring AABB in, bring in AACC in, bring in, you know, and we need visionary leadership to say, you know what, we can't afford to be sending people to all these separate meetings. Let's get them all together. Let's get a big tent thing going, and let's put the academics and the clinical and the technology all under one big tent. But I'm disappointed that that doesn't seem any closer to being a reality today than it was, a decade or two ago, Bruce, when we tilted at that windmill.
So there's a revolution waiting to happen, but we don't know who's going to be behind it.
Because, you know, Bruce, I can see the immunology lab and the blood banking group combining to find immunological markers that indicate that patients who are requiring, if they are actually still requiring repetitive transfusions, it may be that we've moved on to gene editing, but if they're requiring repetitive transfusions, let's predict which ones are going to be developing a multitude of antibodies and are problematic. Instead, we're doing it by hand with those little charts over and over. Talk about something that lends itself to rules.
Well, we've asked more questions than answers here, but at least laying out the nature of the problem and this notion of reform medical schools, reform residency programs, and new entrants into the huge commercial market to provide us the solutions that we need to run our labs that Mike's been talking about.
And the other thing that I think the other medical professions need or that should be required, say, in medical school, right now, you're required, you do your 2 years of classwork, I mean, depending upon what program you're in, and then you do your clinicals. But you don't really do a formal clinical rotation in pathology in most places. You have a pathology class, and depending on how it's taught, it may be more clinical or less clinical. But I think it's as important as surgery, as important as internal medicine, is the diagnosis. And people should be rotating, spending a full 6 weeks to 3 months, 6 weeks in the CP lab and 6 weeks in the AP lab, so that they will know how to interpret those tests, how to use those tests, how to communicate with the diagnosticians who are really driving what they're doing.
One thing's certain, there'll be a lot more PhDs in healthcare delivery, because they're going to have a better grasp of this new technology than some of the MDs. And of course, MD PhDs will play a role there too.
If we can get that Flexner report, we'll have more computers.
Well, I'm waiting for it. Why don't you do that?
Yeah. Hey, guys, I want to thank you so much.
This was great.
This was really great. I want to thank you both for making time to be here and for sharing not just the history, but also the future.
Looking forward. That's the most important thing of all.
So, and in closing, happy 40th anniversary to the summit.
Yep, for sure.
It's not just the destination, but it's the journey that makes us who we are.
Yep.
And you two have been a huge part of that journey for pathology informatics.
Well, it's been fun all the time, all the way.
And yeah, thanks, Mary, for putting this together.
Thank you.
Looking forward to a series of podcasts, girl. Good job.
Yep.
All
sure.
Right. Thank
the oral history of our field. Thank you very much.
the first Pathology Informatics Summit podcast.